And then we can have a discussion about, okay, who would I need to talk to see if that's possible to move another project off my plate, for example. So the conscious agreements are all about getting aligned, getting on the same page, making sure that we see things the same way.
Welcome to the System Hub Podcast.
Hola.
Konnichiwa.
Guten Tag.
Where we interview world-class experts.
You have to have a lot of passion for what you're doing.
I was fanatical in my 20s.
If you could find a way to produce a business that works without you, your life would change like that.
Extracting, organizing, and optimizing their best systems and processes for rapid business growth. Now, let's get into the show.
Today, I'm joined by Annie Heyman-Pratt. She is the author of a really great book called The People Part. And I think you all know I love a good system. Her work is effectively a system for managing the people part of business, which I think is an area often misunderstood and overlooked, let alone trying to distill it down into a system. So she's got deep experience from her family business, the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf. And she was involved in growing that up to 70 stores. And then after the sale of that business, went on to do a range of different consulting gigs in different businesses and industries. So I couldn't be more excited to really dive into her process. So firstly, though, I'll just welcome you to the call, Annie. And maybe just to start, I'd love to know, do you see yourself as a systems person?
Yeah, thanks for having me. And it's funny, I didn't used to think of myself as a systems person, but I do now. I definitely do now. And I think of systems as like a great way to organize whatever your system is, to organize information or what you're doing in a way that you don't have to create it from scratch every time, right? Like you don't have to rethink about it. And in that way, I think it's huge.
And that's how I feel about your book also. I know in the book, you talk about the idea of these seven agreements, which in itself I see as a system. Now, it might not necessarily be a linear system that you follow in an exact order, but it's a system for managing the people part. And that's a big part of what I'd love to dive into today.
Yeah, happy to do so.
Maybe if we could go through each of the agreements, I'd love to try and pull out what you consider is the essence or the most critical component of that. And maybe we can even talk about some of the tools that would help someone achieve that agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a precursor to that, why don't I start by just sharing how I think of agreements in a business and why I use the term agreements, why I think they're incredibly important for business, because I see agreements as how people work together to get results. And it's, how would I say, when you're in business, everything's an agreement, whether you realize it or not. So when people start with a company and they accept a role, their role is the first agreement they make, right? It's, I agree to work here and take a set of responsibilities, do a bunch of tasks, and that's my first agreement. Some certain expectations are an agreement. A project plan is an agreement. Then we have explicit agreements, like when somebody delegates something, we're making an agreement. I would like to transfer this set of responsibilities to you. Do you agree to take it on as a delegation? And when I think about how people work together to get results and why I think agreements are so important is because agreements are two-way, meaning we need to realize, as the person who's got the responsibility, who needs to get a result, we need to understand that we are making and renegotiating agreements all the time. It's like when I agree to participate in a project and there's a project plan, it's my responsibility. It's going to work best, I should say, if I take the responsibility of looking at this project plan and thinking, can I agree to this? Can I actually do this? Because the person that's making the project plan is making that assumption. And if I am looking at it and I really can't do it, then what's going to happen? If I don't speak up and say something, then my boss is going to make an assumption that I'm good with it. We are going to move down the path in the project and probably get to a point where there's a crisis, because I finally am like, actually, I didn't think I could do it. And now I see I really can't do it. And now we have a problem. And so what we want business to run in agreements is because we want everybody to be thinking about for themselves, what am I agreeing to? Can I still do that? And every time we're going to bring on something new, change something, we have to rethink about all the other agreements we have, all the things that might need to change as well. And if we can't work through that kind of agreement system, right, then what happens is nobody has any trust at all. Because then it's, if I say, sure, I'll do the project, but you can't trust me that I actually will meet those commitments or that I will renegotiate, then we don't have a business that can actually work. That you've got a business instead where the people at the top have to know everything. And that is becoming less possible. It's just, it's not possible anymore.
What I like about the way that you've articulated that, a lot of these agreements really center around this idea of expectation management and setting out, here's my expectation. You're agreeing that, okay, now our expectations are aligned, which then makes it much easier to manage further down the line.
Yes. It's almost impossible to manage without that.
Yeah. And I look through the lens of our systems, processes, and policies. Really, oftentimes a lot of staff handbook policies, things like that, and systems are just the documented form of these agreements and expectations where you're saying, and here is how I expect this particular task to be complete, or here is how I expect you to operate in this situation based on our values.
That's right. Unfortunately, we can't document everything, nor do we need to, but we really need to just know that we are constantly making and remaking agreements. And one of the things that I find interesting about agreements in business is, and I say this all the time, is agreements are not a promise. They're not a promise because agreements in business are always situational. Okay, so I guess there's some agreements or expectations that aren't exactly, I agree to not steal. Okay, fine. We can call that one good as is. But most other agreements, like I'm going to finish this report on time, those are all situational, meaning if some emergency comes up that I have to turn my attention to, I might have to renegotiate that agreement. And it doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't make it so that I am breaking a promise because I've got a set of outcomes that I have to accomplish in a business. That's one of the things that I think is so important in business. And I think it's the second agreement. And that is that we are all clear what we're going for, what a win looks like. Because that's really what I am agreeing to, taking all the actions, doing everything I can to win this game. But I can't promise it. I can't promise it any more than a basketball player can promise to make any particular basket.
Yeah.
They can do their best to try. They can take all the actions that we, you know, that we decided we're going to be a great strategy, et cetera. And yet, things can happen, make that outcome not go that way, or make us have to change our plans. So
we touched on the second agreement there. So that might be a good segue to jump into the first agreement, which you've got learning self-leadership. Can you tell us a little bit about that one? And again, I really, because there's quite a bit in the book, my key here is to try and find the critical component or either an action or a tool or something that someone can get into place for that. So maybe we can start there.
Absolutely. So the first agreement is that we all agree, the people in the business agree to show up in self-leadership instead of self-protection. Okay. So I need to just explain what that is. And once I explain what it is, then it's pretty obvious. And self-protection is when we as human beings, because we're human, we aren't robots who have zero emotions. We actually, I think Brené Brown said it, we actually are feeling beings who think. And we have a hard wiring. We have a part of our brain that is very old. It's very, some people call it the reptilian brain. And its sole purpose is to look for threats. Okay, to look for threats. And we can't turn it off. And so when we get triggered, so it could be anything from I smell smoke when I'm in a movie theater. Okay, that is going to, my amygdala is going to sense that and say smoke should not be in a theater and you need to start running. Okay, and that's a kind of an extreme example. When we're in business or when we're working together with other people, I might see somebody roll their eyes as I'm speaking, and that's a threat. My automatic way of processing it will right away say that's a threat and will put me into what we call emotional reactivity. So then as I'm speaking, now I'm no longer thinking about what am I trying to communicate to help everybody get an outcome here? But instead, I'll be thinking, oh my gosh, does that person think I'm not smart? Are they not going to support me in this project? Are they saying bad things behind my back? Now my focus has turned away from the work at hand and into me. Now I'm worried about me. And that means what self-protection is. Now I'm thinking about me. And when I'm in that spot, when us as humans are in self-protection, we can no longer think straight. We literally do not, our blood drains away from this frontal lobe, which is where all the complex, creative, collaborative thinking and acting comes from. And it literally, blood drains out of that and goes to our big muscles so we can run away or fight. And that's the part of where, as human beings working in business, we need to learn how to tame that. We need to learn to recognize when we are in a place of reactivity so that we can get out of that reactivity and back to what we call self-leadership, back to a place of where I'm neutral, I'm okay with myself, I'm okay with everybody else who's here, and we now can think about the best way to accomplish what we're working on.
This first agreement is a little bit more work on yourself. And sometimes with those types of things, because it's a constant game and you never really get to the end.
That's right.
That idea of being the right leader and then doing the right work on yourself to show up to be that best leader. Yes. The second agreement is a little bit easier to grab onto a something and a deliverable, which is defining company goals. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yes, for sure. Business is about people coming together to achieve goals, to achieve outcomes. And if I think of it like sports or performing arts or something, that's the point. We come together in business not to just do personal and professional growth. That would be cool. That was all it was about, but it's not. It's we really come to business to achieve something. If you're working at a car manufacturer, your whole point is to produce really great cars that people love to drive, that are super respected, and that business can make enough money that it can keep operating, that it can have really great employees there. And so the reason we need to understand what those goals are is because that's why we're coming together. And if people don't know the goals, it's like asking them to win a basketball game before teaching them the game, before they even know, oh, this is how I do it. And so everybody, I'm a firm believer that everybody in the company really needs to know the basics of what the point of us is and what success looks like so that everybody in their role can understand where that fits, where their piece fits with the biggest picture. For example, if one of the goals is that we have this year, I'll just make one up, that we have a 15% net profit. Okay, so that seems obvious, but if you're in the marketing department, you might not have a real sense of how does my part contribute to that? And that's the part where we want them to not only understand that we need that 15% profit margin, but what are the other goals too? What is the sales goal? What kind of sales do we want? What is our ideal customer here that marketing should really go for? how are we being positioned in the market so that we know what reputation we want? We want people to say to us. And we really need to communicate that throughout the company all the time. And interestingly enough, the number one complaint we get from leaders here, myself and my team at Leading Edge Teams, the number one complaint we get from leaders is, I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't really know what I'm going for. And every time we tell that to CEOs or entrepreneurs, they're shocked. They're shocked because they're like, wait a minute, we think we talk about that all the time. But we don't talk about it enough in clear, concrete goals, really clear and concrete, so that it's not just like, we need to have great customer service. It's, what does great customer service look like? And how would I even know if I achieved it? Is it that we have a great net promoter score? Great, that's a place to start. Is it that we could poll people and we have a reputation for serving them really well? Great. That helps me know. So we want to make the goals concrete and that people throughout the company really do know what they are.
My systems brain can't help to go, ooh, what's the process here? And I think the takeaway for defining your company goals is to find the rhythm and the method that works for your organization where you set an annual plan and target for what we're going for, then we'll break that down into a quarterly basis and then have that communicated through to individual team members so they can then say, and here's how I contribute towards that, and have the discussion of setting targets and reviewing how we're going.
Exactly.
The next agreement you've got is this idea of establishing clear roles. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, for sure. The first complaint we get from people is that they don't know what they're supposed to be doing, what their work should produce. The second complaint we get is, I don't know my part. I don't know really what I should be doing here. So that when people ask me to participate in a new project or take on a new responsibility, I don't even know if I should. Like, people really need to understand, what do I contribute? And how do my contributions matter? What am I responsible to make sure happens? What's my part and what's not my part? And getting that role clarity, which is not that easy and has to keep being re-clarified, does require not only people thinking about what's the structure of the business, what are the functions, how do we cross-function, etc., but it really requires people to think about not only about themselves, but to collaborate with other people to say, okay, this is my part, but does that mean that's your part? Does my part end here and your part picks up again? And there are times that we have to keep negotiating that, because as the business changes, our roles need to change along with it.
Mm-hmm. Probably a key component of that would be having position descriptions in place that articulate what is it that you're here to do and how do we measure success in that role.
Exactly. And in fact, I think of it as, in a role description, I think of it as having two main parts. The first main part is responsibilities and tasks, kind of like overall responsibilities. But the second part is success criteria, right? That's the, how do I know if I'm successful? And if I need to produce a 15% net profit on my product, then I need to know that's a success criteria.
Yeah.
If I need to grow our division by a certain amount, I need to know that. If I need to get a product launched by the end of the year and that's going to make me successful, then I need to know that.
Mm.
So super important to articulate both.
Yeah.
Because people need to know not only, I'm responsible for this product line and how it sells, but they need to know, what does success look like?
Yeah.
Is this a year where we just want to do as much as we did last year, or is this a year we want to grow a lot?
Yeah. And that links perfectly up to that second agreement around defining the company goals. The fourth one you've got is building high trust relationships. Can you tell us a bit about that one?
Yes, for sure. High trust relationships are not relationships where you know everything about everybody else, but they are relationships where you trust each other to have each other's backs, meaning that I can trust that my coworker, when they are making decisions, when they are changing plans, etc., that they will think about how that impacts me, that they won't just take an action that they know might hamper my ability to do a good job in my role without talking with me, without negotiating it, that I don't have to watch my own back, because that takes, oh my gosh, the amount of energy it takes for people to watch their own backs. It's like they can't do even a tenth of their job when they're obsessed about how am I doing? Who's after me? Who do I need to worry about here? And instead, we want those high trust relationships to be, I can focus forward. And anytime I make a change, I know I'm going to think about who I impact and include them and trust that everybody else is going to do that too.
Mm.
And that it basically gives back everybody so much time. Because again, they don't have to think about who might be doing something that's hurting me, which goes back to the first agreement of we can't be in self-protection. We can't be having those thoughts all the time of I'm worried that this person's going to undercut me and compete against me in our own company. We need to get ourselves to a place where we really trust each other. And part of it is by making those kinds of behaviors, those kinds of agreements explicit, that we say that we have an operating standard, we call them success standards, where we know that if you're expected to reach out to me, if you're going to make a decision that is going to impact me in a big way, in a meaningful way.
Yeah. There's probably a couple of different ways that we can tick and help to improve this particular agreement. Obviously, things like getting company values clear and everybody on the same page around mutual respect and how you engage with each other. Then there's probably other components around your meeting cadence and how frequently you're meeting with the team member to build up that trust and to reach a level of understanding. Obviously, there's potentially some regular meetings or whether or not annual planning or quarterly planning. Like, again, depending on the role, there would probably be different ways to build that. The next one you've got here is this idea of agreement number 5, making conscious agreements. How does that one fit into the mix?
Yes. So that one is all about getting clear on what you really have on your plate, what your responsibilities really are, that you have the responsibility to clarify those so that you can be counted on, so that you can renegotiate when you need to. For example, if I agree to a project plan, and again, a project is something that I think of as coming right from the goals, right? Goals break down into kind of sub-goals, and those sub-goals turn into projects and plans. And if I'm agreeing to a project, okay, and in this project plan, it's really not clear about the timeline. It's just, we're anticipating that we'll get done sometime before the end of the year. Then it's on me, and I know that I have a lot on my plate, as all team members do these days. I don't, maybe they're out there, but I can't remember ever working with a team member who wasn't like oversubscribed, that didn't have a bit too much on their plate. Okay. And that's okay, because we can learn to work with that. That's okay. But what we can't do is if we don't understand what things take, if we don't understand what's expected, then we can't go into it and make conscious renegotiations. We can't make real commitments. And so that's why it's like we want the agreements that people are thinking about it. That's what we mean by conscious. That I don't just say, sure, I'll get it done by the deadline, without actually thinking, can I actually get that done by the deadline?
Yes.
And if I can't, to speak up early and say, here's how my workflow looks. I'm not seeing how I could get it done by the deadline. Perhaps if I could move this other project back, then I could maybe do it. And then we can have a discussion about, okay, who would I need to talk to see if that's possible to move another project off my plate, for example. So the conscious agreements are all about getting aligned, getting on the same page, making sure that we see things the same way.
I think a big tool that really helps with this is some form of project management software, something where tasks can be assigned. It's clear who is doing them and what is the due date, and having the person involved in setting that due date. And then if things start missing due dates, to then provide updates, renegotiate and reset timelines as required. But having that open, transparent visibility for the whole team to see whom is working on what and how are they going, I feel like that would be an essential part of this.
It is, for sure. And there's two things about that. The first is that what we really need is, it's not okay to miss a deadline. It's okay to say something ahead of time. We need people to anticipate earlier, because if we miss a deadline, we can't recover from that. But if we say early, I'm unsure if I can make it, let's talk about it now. That's what we're looking for. And we want an environment that is psychologically safe enough, right? That comes from that fourth agreement, the one before this one, that we want things to be psychologically safe enough that people feel okay to say that, to say, I don't think I'm going to make it. And that we don't do the thing that so many of us do for, I think, a really long time of thinking, I don't want to embarrass myself and seem like I'm doing a poor job. So I'll just not say anything right now and I'll probably get it done. And then we don't get it done. And then we're in a much worse position later. So we want people to bring it early. So that's the first thing, the first part that I wanted to add. The second thing that I wanted to add is that what we find is that the very beginning of projects, we use a process called a project charter. And the project charter really lays out what's the expected outcome of this whole thing. What is it that we're really working to achieve? And then the second thing it lays out that has quite a few pieces in it, but the two main things are the outcomes. And then the second thing are the deliverables, meaning like, what are the parts and the pieces that are going to make up this outcome? And those are the things that usually go into the project management system that has the timelines and the tasks.
I feel like that also relates to your next agreement around recognizing and responding to change, because we're talking about spotting these things early.
Yes, exactly. The truth is, in business today, it's always changing. That's the physics of business. The law of business physics is that things are always changing. And the biggest reason is because we don't control the external environment. And business actually has to operate in an environment that we don't control. For example, we don't control what technology changes are coming down the pike. We don't control when we have a recession. We don't control when customers change their expectations. We don't control the amount of competition out there. There's so many things that we don't control, but we have to respond to. We don't control it, and yet, here it is. Here's the pandemic. That's like the mother of all change, I think of as a recent example, right? Here's the pandemic, and guess what? We have to respond. We have to do something different. And so to know that how we work with change, how to knowing that this is just always going to be part of it, is super important. It's super important, because otherwise we're going to be eternally frustrated that things just won't stay the same, and they won't. And not only does the environment change, but we change.
Yeah, definitely looking at all of the agreements so far, a lot of it has to do with shaping that company culture, setting appropriate standards.
Yes.
How do we engage? What do we all consider is fair and reasonable? The last one is the agreement of creating your company culture. How do you think about that? Because I feel like the other agreements, they're all contributing to this.
They are. They're all contributing to it. For sure. And I think of company culture as your habitual agreements, your habits, how you know that people are going to behave in your company. Okay, every company has a culture, whether you know what it is or not, it's there. And it has explicit rules of the culture and understood rules of the culture. For example, when I was working with my family business, one of the understood rules of the culture was no complaining, ever. So that was my father. It's, you cannot bring me a complaint. That just won't ever work. You can bring me a suggestion, but you can't just shoot down something. You can't just say it won't work. You can't say that you're all overwhelmed. Whatever it is, you got to bring me something I can really work with here. Okay. So if you think about companies that you work in, it's some things. It's in general where you can push on the boundaries and where you can't. Okay. So we want to understand those. And we want to make some things about the culture very explicit, that they're habitual. So for example, if I use the one about not complaining, what we really want, because for sure, complaints are not good in any culture. Complaints are basically just an admission of feeling powerless. I don't like how this is going and I can't change it. So that's not good for anybody. So what we want instead is for people in our company to know when things aren't going well, you can absolutely bring it forward. And you want to bring it forward with context and with suggestions. Even if you don't know if the suggestions can work. I often have team members come to me and say, look, this part isn't really working with how we do this part of a client engagement. It's just not working. And here's what I've thought of doing differently. Here's how I think we could do it, right? It immediately changes the nature of that interaction. And we want people to not even have to think about, I'm going to bring a suggestion. It's like, we want it to be second nature. And that's what makes a culture. Is that you know how to do a bunch of things second nature without even thinking about it. One of those things is that in a culture, we want people who don't blame, literally who know how to stay out of blame. Because if we have a culture with a lot of blame, we have too many people in self-protection, and now none of us are productive enough.
One of the hardest things is changing this culture, and we'll make some suggestions as we've gone through today, and people say, of course, I want a no blame culture, and I want people to come forward with suggestions. And I think everybody goes, of course, that would be better. Similarly, of course, having a systems driven business where people know there is a way of doing things and it is documented and I can follow process. Actually getting to that, I'd be keen for your thoughts on what are some things you can start to do to make changes in culture.
Yes. One of the first things you can do really is not to go crazy and start with everything, but to start with some key things that you make explicit. For example, one of them is that we do everything we can to not miss deadlines or not miss agreements. That we literally write an agreement out that says, I agreed to do my very best to bring things up early. And that when I can't bring it up early, here's how we could recover from that. And that we get people talking about what would make it possible. Are there times where you're feeling like you can't bring something early? Let's talk about those. And so to start with some basics and literally write down, document, make an agreement of what it looks like when we're doing this. And then during your meetings, maybe quarterly, you look back at those. And it's like, how are we doing? And if we are still not meeting the agreement, then we know we need to talk about this more. There's something else going on here that we need to get to the bottom of. And what I find is that when you get a few basics going, it's really interesting how it solves for so many other things. Because once we have a culture where we talk about change early, we don't miss deadlines because we're negotiating early. Once we have that, blame goes way down. what are you going to blame for? What we're doing instead of having blame about missing things, instead, we're going to have a lot of discussions and hard decisions early.
And blame often comes back from, again, not having appropriate expectations and knowing what's expected of me to get the desired outcome. And if it's clear and it's documented, and the way that I see systems, processes, and handbooks and getting those policies in place, we're effectively documenting certain habits that you want to have exist in the business. That's and it's a documented habit. We follow that, we reference that up until the point at which it becomes, this is how we do things here.
Exactly.
I feel like that systems and processes, and I'm obviously a little bit biased, but I find it's a catalyst for so much of this, because you're actually capturing, this is what I consider is important. Now I've put it out there. There is no room for confusion. And if something goes against it, next time I can point to that thing in the handbook or the system and said, look, it's outlined here. Next time you need to have the system handy, or what happened? Exactly right.
But then we have something real to talk about, because otherwise when people make excuses and they're like, I didn't know I was supposed to do it that way, they're like back at square one again. Instead of getting to talk about, oh my gosh, I can see how you had two things totally conflicting on your plate and you weren't so comfortable bringing it up early. How can we solve that?
Yes.
That's what you're really going for, is not that you're never going to have issues, that everybody's going to do everything right. It's more that you're going to have the right things to solve for. It's, again, I think of it not that different than sports. It's if, and I talk about basketball because I think it's an incredibly simple game to explain and to watch. But in basketball, you have you have a game strategy. You have all your skills down. No professional basketball player has to think about how they pass the ball anymore. They've got that down, but not every pass actually complete. But since they have a strategy, and since they know how to pass the ball, when it doesn't complete, they have a sense of, oh, what's at stake? Now what should I do? Now what should we talk about in the timeout? What we don't want to be talking about in the timeout is, you didn't pass the ball the right way. That we can't talk about.
Yeah.
It's too late.
It's too late. We're playing the game.
So we need to be talking about, oh my gosh, they had a guy that was in a position to steal it that we didn't anticipate. How are we going to respond to that?
Yeah. I love the 7 agreements and how it identifies key areas in this people part. I know we covered the first one was learning self-leadership. A lot of that is that ongoing continual improvement.
Yes.
We talked about defining the company goals, which thinking about your cadence and how often are you doing that and how is that communicated? Establishing clear roles, they would be position descriptions, and then also relating what the individual needs to do to help contribute to those company goals. The building high trust relationships, a lot to do with thinking about how often you're meeting with people and how you build trust. Making conscious agreements, and we talked about using project management tool as a way to get clear visibility and transparency for the team, recognizing and responding to change. And we also finished up with the creating the company culture and touched on a few things there, but really how systems, processes, policies underpin a lot of that, because you're making the things that haven't been verbally said and just bringing it front and center and saying, here are my expectations and standards.
Yes.
I know the book goes into a lot more detail in each one of those.
Yeah.
In the tail end, if people want to find out a little bit more about your work, I'll pop a link so they can get the book from Amazon. And also, where's the best place to send people if they want to go a little bit deeper?
Yeah, to our website, which is leadingedgeteams.com. And you can find us there. There is a really great leadership quiz right on the homepage that get people off to a good start, I think, with how we think about leadership from our point of view. And the book, when I wrote the book, I really wanted people to have what I think are the basics, the foundation of a great team, of having a business where the team operates the business, where you don't have just one executive or one entrepreneur who has to control everything. It's the team is the one who is actually producing the outcomes. And that's when you get the biggest results.
Yeah. And that's what spoke to me with your book as well. Like, again, I feel like it's a very under-addressed area. So a huge thank you for your shares and time today.
You've just been listening to the System Hub podcast. Remember, we've documented this system for you so you can literally swipe and deploy it within your business. Head to www.systemhub.com/podcast to download it now.